Episode number 238 with Steve Barton. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton, and thank you for tuning in. This week, it is just you and me. We got a couple of emails, a couple of questions about poker hands from listeners, so we're going to go over some of that. Just shoot the breeze, and welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. I'm a little sore. As most of you know, I have a standing desk, and I literally don't have a chair here, so... I ran this morning. I woke up kind of with the wild hair, and I decided that, you know, I'm going to run a half marathon, or at least the distance of one. There's no races with COVID or anything, but I thought I'm going to run a half marathon. I'll run 6.55 miles, turn around, and come back. And I did that this morning, and my feet really hurt. So I don't know how long I'm going to be able to stand and record here, but I'll do my best. Got a lot of feedback on the name of the show. Thank you guys for writing in on that. It's pretty cool. I was pretty set on the Stevie B show, and I believe I have changed my mind. We got some feedback here. I'll read them off. How about Rio Cricket says, how about just the Steve show? Andrew Pieper, you guys know him. He recommended three. He said, burning a hole in my pocket. Another one he said was, what are the odds? And another one is, corner of return and investment. Greg says, gamblers unanimous. And then Chad McVean, he says, trending up. Kind of like that one. He says, it works with poker, stocks, life, etc., which is basically what this show is about. Andrew Mokey says, how about I'm all in with Steve Barton. I kind of like that one. One that I'm leaning to is from Sean Fogelman. And he says, how about In It to Win It with Steve Barton? I like that one a lot. It's kind of, I don't know. It kind of goes with my personality. Like, the show is not only just about poker. It's about, I think, just winning in life. And it's kind of got a ring to it, too. You know, the all-in one is good as well, because that doesn't necessarily only apply to poker. But it, you know, everyone knows what all-in means, you know, whether they play cards or not. I don't know. Tell me what you guys think. Give me some feedback. Go to headsuppoker.info, and you can click on the Submit a Hand tab there and log here what you think. Or you can go to Twitter, at HUP Podcast, and let me know there. I'd be curious. I've got a tweet up there that that you can tag along on and submit what you think. But I think I'm leaning to one of those two. So in the next few shows, we're going to switch over. Andrew, our editor, said that when we switch over to the new name, you should still be subscribed, because all that'll change is the graphic of the show, and that's basically it, and you should still be subscribed, so that'll be nice. So thank you for those responses. We also got a couple of reviews, one on iTunes from Roscoe All-Star. He says, great podcast, keep up the good work. Thank you, Roscoe. Got another one on YouTube. It's from OE. He says, great podcast. Love you guys. Thank you. Thank you. Love the feedback. Love it. One of the best ways to grow this show is rate and review us on iTunes, and that'll put us just a little bit topper on the list. So appreciate all 5-star reviews, and keep them coming. We have a couple of hands here. I'm going to go over the first one. This is Andy from St. Louis. Steve, love your podcast. Hope you and Mike are doing well. Saw in your show notes that you reminded people to submit hands to the podcast. I played a hand recently. This was at a 2-cent, 5-cent zone poker on Bovada. So zone poker is like, maybe you've heard of Zoom poker or what's the other one? I think it's speed poker, lightning poker. Anyhow, what it is if you don't know, you basically just get thrown into a poker. It's cash games, and you get thrown into a table and you play a hand. After you play that hand and you fold, you immediately get zoomed over to another poker table. And since it's Bovada, everyone is anonymous, so you have no notes on any of these players, and you really don't know who you're playing at all. And it's an interesting way to play because it's very fast. You can go from playing 50 hands an hour to probably 100 or 120 hands an hour, maybe even more, because what'll happen is, like, let's say you're on the button and action is under the gun, you can click the fold now button, and instantly you'll get moved over to another table. So everyone at the table that's playing there won't know that you've folded. You know, it'll still keep your avatar there, and like you're still in the hand, but you have been already folded out, and you get moved over to another table, and you instantly start playing another hand. So it's a really neat way to get a lot of reps in, and it forces you to play not necessarily against individual players and player types, because you don't know who you're playing against. They're all anonymous. You can't take notes on these people, and they don't even have a screen name. It just says a number, and that number is the position that they're in, according to where they're seated at the table. It's kind of interesting because you have to play against what you think the general field of Bovada playing a 2-cent, 5-cent game would play. So anyhow, I played a little bit of it. It's fun, interesting. It's very fast. I can't play it for much longer than 30 or 40 minutes before taking a break because your brain is just always working. Okay, starting stacks are Hero has $4.48. We're in the big blind. UTG has $1.50, and Under the Gun Plus One has $4.92. So if your game is normally 2-cent, 5-cent, then this is right up your alley. If let's say you're normally playing like a 1-2 or a 2-3 or a 2-5 game in dollars, then think of these as ratios. Think of Hero as having $448, Under the Gun having $150, and Under the Gun Plus One having $492. Okay, it's just ratios. The thing we do have to take into context here is limits account. They're probably one of the biggest indicators of what skill level your average field is playing, right? So if you have an online game that is a $1, $2 game, generally speaking, the players in that field are going to play probably a little tighter and a little better than the, you know, 1-cent, 2-cent field, okay? All right, so action, six-handed, Under the Gun limps 5, Under the Gun Plus One, Hijack, also limps. And it folds to us in the big blind with the Ace of Hearts, Five of Clubs. All right, so I'm going to, for this hand, pull up your favorite equity calculator of mine. I use Slice by EV. They're free programs you can download on the internet. Just Google Slice and it'll come right up. Download that. Another one is Equilab. It's basically an equity calculator. You can put in what your hand is, and then you can put what range of hands you think your opponents have. And then you basically click play, and it'll tell you what your odds are of winning as opposed to the opponents. So we put in Hero's hand. He has Ace of Hearts, Five of Clubs. And for Under the Gun to limp in a 2-cent, 5-cent game, I put a range of pocket eights all the way down to pocket twos. I think generally speaking, at a 2-cent, 5-cent table, people are probably going to raise Under the Gun nines, tens, jacks, queens, kings, and aces. They're probably going to raise ace, queen, ace, king, and, you know, ace, jack suited, maybe. So I took those hands out of their range. It is possible that this player's limping aces under the gun. If you really want to get down to it, what you can do is you can assign, weights to that. So maybe you can say that, okay, maybe 10% of the time he's limping aces under the gun, and 90% of the time he's raising that. If you really want to split hairs, you can do that with each one of these. But just for simplicity's sake, I'm going to say that he's just always raising nines plus, and he's always raising ace-jack suited plus, and he's always raising ace-queen off plus. It's the... I think we're going to get close enough here. I also said that he could be limping ace-10 suited through ace-2 suited, suited broadways, and then some little suited cards, you know, like 5-4 suited, 6-5 suited, 6-7 suited, 8-7 suited, like that. Then I put, you know, off-suited broadways and all the way down king-8 offsuit, queen-8 offsuit, jack-8 offsuit, 10-8 off, 9-8 off, and like that, and any ace. All right, so that's the range. It comes out to about 35% for under the gun at a 2-5 cent zoom poker. Player 3, under the gun plus 1, who limped behind under the gun. I think his range is about the same, maybe a little bit more. So, for him, I basically put everything that we did for under the gun, moved his range up about 40% or so. So, we have, when you get an under the gun limp and then someone limps behind, I think they're more inclined to have like a lot of the you know, suited one gappers, suited two gappers, things like, you know, 9-6 suited. I think they're more likely to call there when you kind of have the protection of the under the gun guy limping, you know. I even put in things here like, king-7 offsuit, 10-7 offsuit, you know, stuff like that. Every ace, except for I took out of their range, just like I did with under the gun. I took out nines, tens, jacks, queens, kings, and aces, ace, king, ace, queen, and ace, jack. So, we do that. Those are our ranges that we put in there. Now, so, under the gun limps 5, under the gun plus 1 limps, and now it folds to us in the big blind with ace of hearts, 5 of clubs. Hero checks. I think this is a pretty good check. Under the gun and UTG1 are going to limp better aces. I really don't like offsuit aces. Let's say we're on the button and it folds to us. I'm going to raise any ace there. Okay, I'm going to raise any king, and I'm almost going to raise any queen, depending on who my opponents are in the blinds. Okay, so I'm not saying to fold ace 5 suited when you're on the button there or anything. No, that's not what I'm saying. I say, generally speaking, in middle position, I'm never playing these offsuit aces unless it's like ace jack plus. After going through Alexander Fitzgerald's program, both his cash game and tournaments, it is tough to turn a profit with offsuit aces. It really is. I think the best way to play those is to play, generally speaking, the wheel aces or the Broadway aces if they're going to be offsuit. Just get rid of the ace-6, ace-7, ace-8, ace-9. You can't make a straight with them. Well, you can, but it has to be a four-card straight. When you get top pair, it usually sucks because you'll have a pair of aces with a crappy kicker, or you'll have a low card that, you know, if let's say you have ace seven off suit and seven's the high card on the board, well, someone else could have a straight. I just don't like offsuit aces. I've seen the math. They just don't seem to make much money, but we're never folding this because it's we're in the big blind and it's free for us to see a flop. So we check. I like the check. This hand is from Andy from St. Louis. Sorry, Andy. I hid the lead. All right. So flop is ace 3-4, all clubs. Okay, so we have the 5 of clubs. So we've got a bad top pair. Okay, we got an ace with a 5 kicker. We've got a bad flush draw. We have the 5 of clubs. We have a gut shot straight draw. So if we get a 2, we get a straight. And we also have a gut shot straight flush draw. So if we get the 2 of clubs, then we have a straight flush. All right. Now what to do here? Do we check or do we bet? In situations like this with ranges really wide under the gun and UTG1, I kind of like a donk lead here. I feel when we get raised, we're usually not any good. Someone could raise us with the king of clubs, but I think generally speaking, in these limits, people are just going to call with that. And sometimes people are just going to check behind, and we give them a free card here. So I kind of like a donk lead. I'd probably donk lead this maybe 80% of the time, and then 20% of the time, check it and see what they do. Hero, it likes to check. UTG leads for 15 cents. Hijack calls. And let's see what we'll do. So we got a pot of 17 before the flop. And now with UTG leading and the hijack calling, we've got a pot of, let's see, what would that be? This shouldn't be that difficult. 47 cents. Yeah, we're never folding here. I don't think a check raise makes a whole lot of sense, because they're going to be, I think only better hands are calling you and worse hands are folding. Yeah, I'd probably call. Okay, so we got a pot of, let's see, 59 cents after the rake, Andy says. Turn is the eight of diamonds. All right, so the board now is ace of clubs, three of clubs, four of clubs. Turn is eight of diamonds. Hero, what do we do at this point? I think as played, we continue to check, which Hero does. Under the gun bets 20 cents into 59. The hijack calls. Now Hero raises to 85 cents. UTG jams for his last 45 cents because he started with the $1.50. Hijack folds and I call. I think this kind of depends on what your plan was here, Andy. If we raise to 85 here and the then we get a jam for his last 45 cents. And then if the hijack re-jams, you say later in your letter here that, you know, if the hijack, he said, I don't know if I had a great plan for the hijack, but I think I'd have folded if he re-jammed. I was mainly hoping he'd fold a lot. Well, it worked. He folded. I think that you have to fold if he jams. I don't think that, five high club draw is a great one. We only got one draw to the nut out. You know, I think generally speaking with these limits, you know, when you flop top pair like this with players that are so wide, you just kind of got to go with it. So I don't hate the re-raise on the turn as long as your plan is to fold to the hijack shove. But I'd like to see a donk lead there. Start incorporating that a little bit in your game, Andy. You know, I kind of like to donk lead sometimes top pairs. And I also like to donk lead things like, let's say, okay, so on this flop, it was ace, three, four, all clubs. Let's say we had a flop of like ace, three of clubs, and the four of hearts. And our hand is 5-6 of clubs, okay? Something like that is really neat as a donk lead. Even 5-6 off suit, right? If they don't have an ace, it's kind of tough for them to call. And if they do, you have outs. So start incorporating a little bit of a donk lead there, you know? Hands like this are kind of neat for it. And then also we can donk lead our netted hands like sets and, you know, ace king and stuff on boards like this. Yeah, try that. So hope that, helped Andy. We've got another one. This one is from Michael. Hi, Steve. Love your show. You guys are great and I can't wait for every episode. I have one question and one hand. The question: a few weeks ago, Mike talked a lot about the trouble going on in Seattle and around the country with BLM, looting, and riots. I was wondering if you got any emails saying you were not sympathetic to the cause. Many in the media are getting fired for saying much less. I think things have gone way too far, but I'm keeping my mouth shut. Just curious. Hopefully, poker players are not as politically polarized as the general public. Well, Michael, no. This is the first email I've gotten on that, or any kind of tweet or anything. Am I sympathetic to the cause? Here's how I feel. Okay. I've done a fair amount of, I'd like to consider myself an amateur psychologist, right? I'm fascinated by it. You guys know all the Elliot Rowe hypnosis tapes I've sold. I'm really into writing your goals and kind of, trying to influence and make the best that you can be out of yourself, right? So, like, for example, when I write my goals, I'll write out goals. I'll put them in very big detail, right down to, how much money I'm going to make for this year, things like that. And I know that the more specific you are and the more you write it in the affirmative, in other words, it's positive, the more likely it is to come true. And I also know that, for example, if you want to stop, smoking, and let's say you're a smoker and you want to stop smoking, if you keep thinking to yourself, stop smoking, stop smoking, stop smoking, your subconscious does not hear the stop. It just hears smoking. So what you're doing actually is you're reinforcing the behavior that you do not want, because all it hears is smoking, 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 right? If you would be much better off thinking to yourself or writing in your goals, I am so happy and grateful that I have a healthy set of lungs and peak physical health, right? That would be much better than saying, I am stopping smoking, right? So when I see a basketball game, and it has on the backs of players' jerseys, it says, stop hate. Or I see on the football field in the end zone, and in giant block letters, it says, end racism. I just cringe. Like, it's unbelievable to me that an owner would allow them to put that on his field. Because, like the example I gave with smoking, the same thing applies to this. If you put on your field end racism, whether people realize it or not, they're not seeing the end and then racism. All they're seeing is racism. So you're putting on your field in giant block letters where, with COVID, 10,000 people in the stadiums are seeing it, and millions of people are watching this on TV. When you see stop hate on the back of a jersey, you don't see the word stop. You just see hate. And I think that I'm not naive enough to think that there's no racism, okay? There are racist people, and there always will be. And there are in America, and there are in other countries. I've traveled to other countries, and I remember in Thailand, they were racist against people from Myanmar. And I've spent months there, and their cultures are so damn similar, It would be over stupid things, like they eat too much rice. Like, what does that have to do with anything? You know what I mean? So I'm not ignorant enough to think that there's no racism. There are. But I believe that there is a very small percentage of the population that is racist. A very small percentage. And that is never going away. You're going to have the white supremacists. You're going to have the Black Panther type organizations. And I do not think that by putting end racism on the football field, you're going to get someone from, a deep-seated white supremacist thinking to himself, drinking a beer while he's watching the football game, you know what? I'm not going to go to that KKK meeting today, right? Is this really, like, influencing anyone that it's going to make a difference? I don't think so. I think that energy and that time and that money and that focus would be much better off if the NFL... instead of putting end racism on there, like, what if a team did this? What if they, instead of putting end racism in their end zone, what if they said, What if they wrote in big block letters, they put 2021 Super Bowl champions, right? So every time their team practiced on that field, every time they walked out there, they saw that they put 2021 Super Bowl champions on their field. Do you think they might get a couple extra wins? They may not win the Super Bowl, but you're planting that in your players' subconscious every time they walk out there and every time they run in for a touchdown, right? For half the games for the year and all of their practices. I think that would be a much more positive effect than putting on their stop hate, right? That's my opinion. Okay, so where were we? I got off on a tirade there. You know, another thing too. All right, I guess I'm not done. What if they took all that energy and all that time and all that money and they put it towards curing cancer? Okay, so I don't know who's funding this or who's sending the money out or whatever, but what if instead of putting this towards trying to end racism, right, trying to pick out a couple of bad cops that are probably one out of 300 that the psych exam didn't catch, what if they're trying to, instead of just focusing on that, what if instead they focused on donating money to a curing cancer? Wouldn't that be a better cause? All right, I'm done. Let's just curious. Hopefully poker players are not as politically polarized as the general public. All right, the hand. I've never sent in a hand to anyone before, so I hope I have all the details. Feel free to... Okay. Well, thanks for sending it in here, Michael. Appreciate it. Like it. Everyone is grateful. Six max cash game online, Poker Stars. You lucky bastard. You get to play on Poker Stars. All right, the blinds are 15 cent, 30 cent. Okay. Villain is in the cutoff with a VPIP of 16 and PFR 5 and a 3-bet of 2.1 in 141 hands. All right, let me spell this out. So a VPIP 16 voluntarily puts money in the pot. So how often do they limp or raise or basically come in with a hand? 16% is pretty tight. These are pretty tight numbers. 16-5, 2.1 is pretty tight. 141 hands is a decent sample size. You know, some would argue that you don't really start to get accurate until you get up to, you know, 5 or 10,000. But 141 hands in one session is pretty good, and we got to go with that. Okay. 16% looks like this. This is sevens plus, so sevens through aces. Ace-king suited through ace-eight suited, and then we'll throw in an ace-five suited there. Okay, because we'll throw in one wheel ace. And then all broadways. So basically Jack-10 suited plus, and then Jack-10 off plus. All right, so that's what 16% looks like. This guy is pretty damn tight. Now, PFR, pre-flop raise, is 5%. All right, now again, 141 hands, not a huge sample size, but this is what 5% looks like. This is... nines plus, so nines, tens, jacks, queens, kings, and aces. Ace-king suited, ace-queen suited, ace-jack suited, ace-king off, ace-queen off. That's 5%. Okay? Not very much. And actually, that's 5.4%. So if we take out nines, then it's basically tens plus, ace-jack suited plus, ace-queen off plus. All right? Not many hands. Tight. 2.1% 3-bet, all right? Now, 141 hands, once we get into the 3-bet, this really isn't very accurate, but basically 2.1 is going to be like queens, kings, aces, and ace-king, and that's it, all right? So if you get a guy with a 3-bet of less than 3 and you have a decent sample size on him, he's going queens plus, maybe jacks. All right, he's not doing it with ace-queen unless it's ace-queen suited. So, villain, he was in the cutoff, and those are his numbers, 16-5, 2.1, and he has $25.59. Now, hero is in the big blind, and we are dealt ace of spades, 10 of spades, and we have $49.75. And on to the action. Okay. So, pre-flop action. Under the gun calls 30. Middle position folds. Villain in the cutoff raises to 90. So remember, the villain is a 16-5, 2.1. He raises to 90. Button folds. Small blind calls the 90. And now it's on hero in the big blind with ace 10 suited. Okay, so basically, if we call 60 here, then it'll go to the under the gun, who will also have to call 60, and then we'll see a flop. So what do we do? Do we fold? Do we call? Do we raise? I would argue for a fold here for a couple of reasons. Under the gun has already called. We know that sometimes players will limp under the gun with aces, although that's unlikely because we have one ace in our hand. But they'll limp under the gun with big hands. But more importantly, we're going to be out of position for the rest of the hand with a marginal hand. It is suited, yes, but it is a marginal hand. You get a pair of tens, you can't feel all that comfortable, and a pair of aces, you got a pretty bad kicker. What we're really looking for here is a flush or, you know, some type of Broadway straight. But I don't like the guy that raised this. If I were him, I would have raised more than 90, especially with an under the gun limp. I probably would have raised to 150 or something like that. But the guy that raised here is really tight. So we already talked about what a preflop raise of 5% is. Okay, 141 hands, not a big sample, but this is what we got to go with, right? We already talked about what a 5% raise is. It's queens, kings, aces, and ace king. So how do you think ace 10 fares against that? Ace 10 suited. I'll put it in right now and answer the question for you. We'll press play. Okay, the villain is 71% and we're 29. Not great, right? We do have a lot of people in the hand, so, you know, we could get paid off with the flush, but I would lean towards a fold here. And another reason is because you're not closing the action. You know, the under the gun guy could spike it here and three bet. He probably won't, and I think most of the time, especially in these limits, these players won't. But I just don't want to play out of position with a marginal hand against a guy with numbers like that, you know. So I think the move is folding. But hero calls, and luckily under the gun calls 90. Okay, so again, we're in the big blind with ace 10 of spades, and we've got under the gun, villain, small blind, us. Okay, so four players. Now, with ace 10 of spades, the flop is queen of spades, jack of spades, four of clubs. So, pretty good for having the ace 10 of spades here. Michael says this gives me a draw to the nut flush as well as a draw to the inside straight. That's exactly what you got. So, action on the flop. Small blind checks. Now, there is a pot of 360. What do we do here? Do we lead out? Do we check? What to do? I would probably lean more towards a check here. Multi-way pots are just death. We're out of position. If it goes bet and then raise, we can make a decision then, but I just really don't want to build a pot here out of position. We do have the nut flush drawn. We got a gut shot. So let's see, there's nine clubs left. So that's nine. And then there's four kings. One of those was, nine spades. There's nine spades left. So we have nine outs there. And then we have four kings for the gut shot. One of those kings is a spade, which we already counted. So we got three kings. So that totals out to 13 outs. Generally speaking, you can think of it as, this is a quick way of doing it. I hate to even say this, but it'll get you through like the simple math at the poker table. Is if you have 13 outs, if you multiply that by four, then that will be your general odds for making it by the river. And if you multiply it by, once you get to the turn, if you multiply, let's say you bricked it on the turn, and you still have 13 outs to the river. If you multiply that by two, that'll generally get you the about what the percentage would be for making it on the river. So for this, for 13, if we multiply that by four, we get 54%. And then for the turn, we would get about 26%. So that'll help you with the odds a little bit. I can tell you it's not 54 and it's not 26, but it's close, within five or so. So it'll kind of get you an idea when you're in game playing. Let's see. Hero bets 171 into a 360 pot from the big blind. He says, not sure if I should have check raised here or check called instead. I was not the preflop raiser. Also a multi-way pot. I'd like to hear your input on this. Yeah, you could lead out here. It's just, I just hate these multi-way pots. I'm much more likely, like I said, I probably would have just folded this preflop. I'd much rather play I try to set all my hands up so that I'm heads up, in position with a superior hand, and playing a big pot, so I play the vast majority of my hands from, hijack, cutoff, button, and then you kind of avoid all this. Here we are. Am I going to lead this? I suppose I could see myself leading here, sometimes. I probably wouldn't bet quite so much. You might be able to save a little bit if you get raised. I bet 171 into 360. Maybe make it like 120 and see if you get a raise out of there. Under the gun folds. Villain in the cutoff raises to 750. All right, so this is where we're going back to. Again, 5% isn't completely, after 141 hands, maybe he hit... maybe he's actually raising wider than that. And because there's only 141 hands, he just didn't get very many playable hands. And so his number is 5%, but it actually should be 12%. That could be likely. Or maybe he's even tighter than that and he's only raising aces and kings. That's probably not likely. But, with the information that we have, we think that this guy is pretty damn tight. And we check here, he bets, depending on sizing, we can continue knowing with what we know with the odds. I think most of the time I'm going to check here and see what develops behind us. You got under the gun, and then you have villain to bet after that. Maybe you get a free card. I think that's the main thing to go through here. Turns out villain raises to 750, small blind folds. And then it's 579 to call. I might, instead of calling here, I'm probably just shoving, but with villain's range so tight, I think the move is to fold preflop. Michael, everyone likes results, so we'll get into that. Basically, he board comes out, seven of clubs on the turn, two of hearts on the river. They get it all in. I brick and the board end up with ace high, losing my whole stack, which was almost my winnings for the night. And this is interesting. Villain turns over queen jack of hearts for two pair on the flop. So we now know that 5% was not accurate. So if he has queen jack suited in there, then he also has ace-queen suited, ace-jack suited, king-jack suited. He has king-queen off, ace-queen off. He probably has jacks, tens, nines, eights. And now we're getting up to 7%, 8%. He's probably also got some suited broadways in there. So he may actually be up around 10% here. We'll see what that ranges as and how that does against ace-10 suited. And now it's 56 to 44. We got 44, he has 56. So still not great. I think this is a general lesson, Michael. Just go with the information that you got. If you got a HUD, you only have 141 hands, but the information that you have at that time is he's a 16-5, 2.1, which is extremely tight. And we see here that he's gotten the worst side of variance, I guess. In other words, he's probably had terrible hands, or maybe he was sitting out for a while, and so he got dealt hands, but they were folded, And so, you know, he probably should be a 10 or 12% PFR, but he's actually showing a 5. But, you know, go with the information you got. And once you learn something else like this, you see that, you know, there was an under the gun limp and then he made it, you know, 3X. Make a note of that. Okay. And you can adjust those as you go. As you get more information on them and more hands, then it becomes more accurate. But I think the move is just fold preflop. Just let it go. It looks pretty, but against a 16-5 2.1, it's not. Thank you for that hand, Michael. And thank you, Andy, from St. Louis. I appreciate that. Good little strat talk. Thank you guys for the recommendations for the changing the name on the show. Let me know what you think or submit some others. Go to headsuppoker.info and click on submit a hand. It's basically just an email. It comes straight to me. And if you're on Twitter, go to @HUPpodcast and click the little Twitter link in there and throw in your input. I'd love to hear it. And let me know what you think of the other ones. I'm leaning right now towards In It to Win It with Steve Barton and All In with Steve Barton. So maybe we'll have a little vote off on those. But yeah, I'm trying to think what else is new. I think that's about it. Oh, I've been playing quite a bit on Poker Bros. So that's been a lot of fun. In the last couple of weeks, I've probably put in 25 or 30 hours a week in addition to working, you know, 60 or 70 hours a week at the fire station. Man, it's a lot of fun. It's the games are fairly soft. And we opened up a new one. I guess we're calling it the Black Room. There's a bunch of different rooms that you can go to. So when we started this out a couple of months ago, we were playing in the Red Room. And then we got access to another players union, which was in the Blue Room. It's called the Fishbowl. And then now we just got access to another union, which is in the Black Room. It's got a black chip emblem, and they're calling that one the Pod. And that one's kind of fun. They've got tournaments in there ranging from, well, they have some freebies in there. There's a few freebies that run every day, you know, zero to enter, and you can win cash or tournament entry tickets. And they also have anywhere from $10 up to $250. So I've been doing, and some other ones that they got in the Blue Room. You can just go back and forth between these different rooms if, you know, when you want to switch between them. And they also have some of these progressive knockouts, which are a lot of fun. So they have like $10, $20, $30, and $50 progressive knockouts, which I've been watching some training videos on how to play these effectively. And those have been a lot of fun because what will happen is, let's say you're in a $10 knockout, progressive knockout tournament. $4.50 will be the bounty that's on your head. Now every other player also starts out with a $4.50 bounty on their head. Let's say you knock that player out. You get $2.25 of his bounty. And if he knocks you out, then he gets $2.25 of your bounty. So that's how the progressive works. So it's like $2.25 when you knock out a player goes into you, and you get $4.50 of his bounty. $4.50 goes into, you know, so you split it. You get to keep $2.25, and $2.25 gets added on to your $4.50 bounty. So it ends up making your bounty now $6.75 because you take the $4.50 plus the $2.25. I hope you're following. Now, if you knock out someone else, whatever their bounty is, you divide it by two, you get half of that, and the other half goes on top of you, right? So this is what makes it interesting is towards the end of the tournament, you get some players with some big bounties on their head. If you started with $4.50, by the time you're, you know, down to four-handed, one guy may have $27, another guy's got 30, and another guy's got 40. You know, so half of that, if you knock them out, goes to you. So it makes it interesting because you can get into some pretty cool spots where it's like, well, I have King High here, and he has a $40 bounty, which is, $20 immediately goes to me. And you can calculate – how much that that $20 is worth in extra chips. So I did a whole episode on this a couple of years ago on bounty tournaments. But basically what you do is, let's say, we'll make the math easy. All right, let's say that you start out with 10,000 in chips, okay? That would mean that every guy that you knock out, you get $2.25. So essentially, that is chip EV worth 2,250 chips, right? So if we can take that ratio, when you see a $20 bounty, and you know that every $2 and 25 cents is worth 2,250 chips, you can quickly do the mathematical calculation and find out how much that $20 is worth, which would be an extra 20,000 chips, right? Well, I guess you would, if it's 10,000, yeah, that does make the math easy. So then what you would do is you'd do the math to see if how your hand stacks up to their range of hands, and then you just add an extra 20,000 chips on there, and it's almost always a call. So it forces you to kind of call with hands like, you know, jack high or something, when you would never do that in a regular tournament. But in these bounty tournaments, it actually makes it profitable. And I think most people don't understand that. And that's where you can make a little bit of money. So if you guys want to play, I'm still playing on there. Minimum amount is $500 to play. I'll get you set up on there. And yeah, it basically, you just send the money to me on Venmo or PayPal. There's no actual money kept on the site. I just literally keep it in my Wells Fargo poker bank account. I have a separate checking account that I just use for gambling and for poker. I hold on to the money there. Whenever you want to cash out, you can cash out. We've had a couple dozen people come through and play, and guys are still playing. And if you want to play too, then you're more than welcome. We'll get you set up. I do get a little bit of rake back from what you play, but whatever I get, it goes to the scholarship at the end of the year, and it's just it's a win-win. So let me know if you want to play. Hit me up. Email is headsuppokerpodcast@gmail.com. I believe that's it. I'm going to sign off here and sit down. My feet are killing me. But thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
I found that nothing in life is worthwhile unless you take risks. Nothing. Nelson Mandela said, "There is no passion to be found playing small and settling for a life that's less than the one you're capable of living." Now, I'm sure in your experiences in school and applying to college and picking your major and deciding what you want to do with life, I'm sure people have told you to make sure you have something to fall back on. Make sure you got something to fall back on, honey. But I never understood that concept, having something to fall back on. If I'm going to fall, I don't want to fall back on anything. I want to fall forward. I figure at least this way I'll see what I'm going to hit. Without consistency, you'll never finish. So do what you feel passionate about. Take chances. Don't be afraid to fail. There's an old IQ test was 9 dots, and you had to draw 5 lines with a pencil within these 9 dots without lifting the pencil. The only way to do it was to go outside the box. Don't be afraid to think outside the box. Don't be afraid to fail big, to dream big. But remember, dreams without goals are just dreams.